Greetings, welcome to Movie Banter.
I'm John Sands.
I'm Paul Carenza.
And Paul is back.
Woo!
And Jenny is not.
Woo!
Oh. No, Jenny is away. But also, we don't need her because the ginger one has returned.
It seems
fold.
Like it's been ages. Well, it's been like a month nearly, really.
Could well be.
We had a couple of played in specials.
Yes.
And then you and Jenny...
Stole your thunder.
Exactly. You decided you'd attempt to see if you can live without...
Yeah, we ploughed on without
and
you.
Actually, you did surprisingly well. I enjoyed listening to it. For the first time, I've actually heard a Movie Banter podcast from the other side.
As a punter.
And it was excellent. So, but it's a joy to be back podcasting once again.
And it's good to have you back.
Oh, thank you.
It's not really.
I'm older, wiser, married.
And married. It's more, your first married podcast.
More tired and more belittled. And bullied.
But at least you know your place.
Exactly. Exactly. It's been a happy few weeks.
Yes.
good
honeymoon, was it?
Lovely honeymoon. Of course, I was, you know, because it's a podcast about films and that, I haven't really seen many films because you generally don't.
Nor should you. When you're in the Maldives with your new bride, you shouldn't really be saying, I'm just off to the cinema.
Actually, having said that, we saw three while we were there.
Oh, really?
Because you had a DVD player in the room.
We
saw a few of those. Obviously, I saw Enchanted. That was quite sweet. Saw Once, which was this film. I think that was actually talked about that in one of the very first of our podcasts.
Yeah, it's a musical.
It's a very modern musical about a busker, an Irish busker.
Oh yes, and that was your. It was your favourite musical.
That's right.
Yes. On Desert Island Fox.
It's really worth seeing. Very sweet film. And what was the other one we saw? Oh, we saw What Happens in Vegas as well. And it turns out What Happens in Vegas is that nothing funny happens in Vegas. So.
See, if Jenny was here, she'd give a very different response, largely because she loves Ashton Kutcher.
Well, yeah, you can love an actor and think, oh, but that isn't he dreamy? But doesn't he make a bad film? Well, yes, he can still make a bad film.
She is largely obsessed with look how pretty the man is. Mm. Then that'll gloss over failings in the film because she doesn't come away with a feeling of I didn't enjoy the film. She comes away with a feeling of that film made me feel great because I was looking at the hot man.
But I'm sure she'll be the first to admit that she's wrong all the time about everything. Well, probably not the first to admit.
Probably not the first to admit. Because we'd normally get there first.
Certainly, what
I'm not saying that Jenny is entirely incapable of critical discussion, but when there's someone she really finds hot, then
shiny thing.
Most of her brain shuts down.
Exactly. But no, so as far as I was concerned, What Happens in Vegas should stay in Vegas,
including the making of that film.
Not going to Hollywood. But so we saw that, and then we saw some films on the flight. Not memorable, clearly, in any way at all. What was the Inkheart? I saw.
Oh yes,
with Brendan Fraser. I don't mean he was in it, he was next to me in the scene of watching it together. It was quite sweet. No, it was alright. This is the one that was out quite recently. It's a bit like Bedtime Stories. They're both out at the same time.
Yeah.
Bedtime Stories was the Disney version. Inkheart is the, I suppose, more laudable version in that it's the one based on a novel and it's a British cast and it's more independent. We should be encouraging people to see it. And it was alright. I think my only criticism would be it was one of those that you can tell it's based on a novel when there's loads of characters that aren't properly fleshed out because you can't the time to do it and the big screen and all that sort of thing. So it's alright, it's worth a look, but not quite. I can't imagine a sequel just yet.
Right.
Trying to be Harry Potter, not quite make it.
Okay. So I've done quite a lot cinematically this week.
Have you?
I have done Star Trek.
Ooh.
And Coraline.
Oh yes.
And also I Love You Man.
Oh, very nice of you to say.
Well,
so.
Yes. But more on the cinema, indeed. Didn't I? So I saw that, including Coraline and I Love You Man on the same day.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Hardcore.
It was. Went to see Coraline in the evening and then emerged from the screening relatively late at night.
Yeah.
But it was the weekend, so they had late night showings.
Oh, yes.
And just thought, I Love You Man's on. Go and see that. Yeah, let's go and see that. Yeah, so I just went straight back in.
Now, did that mean that you went back in and paid?
We did pay.
Oh, rookie error.
Well,
rookie error.
Well, also, for two reasons. Partly moral, and also because as we came out of the cinema, that's when we saw the listings and said, that's starting soon.
See, what you really need to do, the real pros, on the way in, commit to memory in which screen all of the different films are. So you come out, you know exactly what's starting.
Although
when.
I'm fairly sure, at the Odeon anyway, they don't show what screen films are on in. Probably for just that reason.
It's why when you pay for your ticket, you know, if you pay for a ticket at all, you've got to peer over at their screen to see all the details and look at it there, because they won't tell you otherwise.
Well, true. Actually, it is on the website, so if we really plan ahead...
Oh, is that right? It won't tell you what screen you're on. Oh, is that right?
But then you never have to pay anyway, because you've got your unlimited pass
thing. I think it's View, where at the tills, they've got a screen facing the customer, so we can all see it.
Yeah.
And it's like a CCTV footage of all of the screens, and it just rotates around.
Oh, okay.
And it's amazing. What it says at the bottom is it will say, like, screen 2, and it will cut to screen 3. And it's the audience. it doesn't show the film because I think copyright reasons they couldn't, but they are showing you, the audience, of each screen, which is really odd because it means you can see, stand there in the queue going, screen three, they look like they're enjoying themselves. Yeah, well, I don't know what's on, but I'll go and see, you know, whatever's in screen three.
But then also, you tend to be, you'll only see that if the film's already started.
True.
So, you know, they're enjoying themselves. Maybe I will see the second half of what they're seeing.
Yeah, because actually, if you're queuing up and thinking, I want to go and see that film in screen two, you look at screen two and you just see a couple of blokes picking their nose.
Yeah.
A couple who've gone to make out before the film starts. You know, a child vomiting. All the usual things you get in a cinema before a film begins.
Of course.
Yeah, I saw Coraline as well, actually, this week. So we can actually have a critical discussion on that before, you know, whereas Star Trek and I Love You Man, I'll let you just rant.
Fair
or monologise.
Talk.
Eulogise.
Talk.
No, that's eulogise. Funerals, isn't it?
Yeah, that's if they're dead. They're not dead. We could crack on with emails.
I'll say email.
We have the one. Actually, having said that, numbers-wise, we were up.
Really?
But emailing-wise, we were down.
Oh, well, so get out there.
So clearly people enjoyed listening to Jenny, but not talking about her.
Now, you can email us at isitstillpodcast@moviemistakes.com.
That's a very good point. It
or is
now,
a new one?
It is now podcast@moviebanter.co.uk.
Woo! New website.
Yes, moviebanter.co.uk is now a website that exists where you can get the podcast there and we'll write stuff about films.
So to get that new website, that clearly cost a bit of money.
It did.
Yeah.
Oh, fortune.
Yeah, so we need your donations. So
really, there's no method for people to donate.
Well, they could donate...
Although, on that note, someone, and I don't know who, because they just put themselves Movie Banter fan, but I did a bike-a-thon recently.
I
cycled, as it turned out, it was a 29-mile course, which I did in about 2 hours. And I was trying to get sponsorship for that and emailed people out through the Facebook fan page. And someone who called themselves Movie Banter Fan sponsored me.
Really?
For a reasonable amount of money.
Really?
So, yes, I won't say exactly how much, but it was a nice amount. So, thank you very much to them.
Thank you, Movie Banter Fan.
Whoever that was, thank you. Actually, sorry, as did a couple of other people,
of course,
I should say. But I think they came through another way.
Maybe
they. If you're listening, thank you as well.
I think we should then have a sponsored cyclothon, London Marathon, whatever. I think we should be a registered charity. This is what I'm really coming down to. Movie Banter should be a registered charity. So you out there can do your sponsored events for us and then send us the money.
That makes perfect sense.
And
I'm sure
that
will
pay for the website.
There's nothing remotely illegal or immoral about
that. No, we'll pay for... We're a cause.
We are a cause. The cost of the website wasn't large.
And we need biscuits.
Well, that's true. You have biscuits. You've just given me a biscuit.
You want a biscuit? I've got some biscuits.
No, don't toy with the...
Sorry,
audience. You can't have a biscuit.
Yeah, the chocolate hot dogs are really nice.
Yes, we seem to have got slightly off track.
Welcome
to
biscuitbanter.co.uk.
The new website exists. Paul and I, it has our recent Twitter posts, and the podcast will be available there, either to listen online or to sort of get the feed and download it and stuff. And other film-related thoughts, which I and or Paul... will post occasionally. So it could just expand into a big film-related thing, or it may just be a base for the podcast.
It started here.
But either way, podcast@moviebanter.co.uk.
That's the email address, so do email us with your thoughts on the movies and things we talk about. Someone who has emailed in, just like that, was Jed, I believe. Is this right?
It is Jed,
got a name
yes.
at the bottom of this. But,
sorry, that could be me.
Jed, friend of the show. That is his surname, it turns out, now, actually. I think his name is Jed, friend of the show. That is convenient. So Jed says, hello, I really enjoyed episode of the 25th hour. We are... running out pretty soon of the pun-based episode subtitles. So if you can think of a title for an episode, particularly of like 27 onwards, I think 39 we've got covered, probably.
True. 26 we've got covered via the most tenuous link in the world.
I hope you're enjoying reading that one as you're downloading this.
Our sympathies for that.
But no, if we do need your help. So if you can think of any movie-based linking in of the numbers 27... onwards, then please do email
I think ideally film titles, we may widen out to lines from films.
Yeah, but anything
possibly
really.
Well-known identifiable lines, rather than just someone just saying, oh, flat 27, because
nice.
That would be a bit generic.
But something, you know, Crowbar In If Need Be, that's fine.
Yeah,
just
true.
Send
and believe me, once you see this week's title, you'll know the definition of crowbar, and you'll see where the bar has been
set. We're setting the bar pretty high on the crowbar level. Setting the crowbar hi.
Yes.
Anyway, Jed says, it's great to hear Jennifer again, and thanks for especially acknowledging me, Jen. Yeah, he's got this thing about her. He'll get over it. If he'd seen her, he wouldn't, really. And the running time was refreshingly shorter, albeit not by a lot. So do people want a shorter run time? Is this what we're thinking?
Well, I think it may just be that, because we started off trying to go for kind of 40 minutes, and it's gradually bled up to occasionally pushing an hour.
I
think we should try and limit it to the 40.
We'll go for the 40 mark if we can. Jed says, still, I did miss Paul. Oh, bless you, Jed. And hope he's enjoying himself on his honeymoon. I did. Thank you. It's very nice of you. Sad to hear that Wolverine isn't fantastic. Quite looking forward to seeing it. Well, don't, from what I've heard. Expert reviewers last week told me not to bother.
And there are now better films out. You should go and see it as well.
And he also says that he loves the idea of a dedicated movie banter blog or website, so doesn't have to wake a whole week to get my fix. Bless you. Bless you.
True, the website will exist. There won't be daily podcasts, I'm afraid, on it. But yeah, the occasional wittering.
Indeed. And Jed also saying that we should also have a special podcast on movies being released this summer. Love to hear that. So in fact, yes, we may well do a little...
so advance preview thing.
Yeah, we're always in the market for a few specials to put out there for you. True. So we might do a little summer movie special of movie banter in future weeks.
Well, Jed mentioned Wolverine in his email, and I said there are better films out, and I've seen those better films.
Such as?
I'll lead off with Star Trek. It's the most recent release. And, yeah, I'll start from the beginning. Star Trek is a reboot, sort of the Star Trek universe, but relatively uniquely among films, rather than, like, Batman Begins, where they say, oh, it's a reboot, and they just start off and say, you've just got to accept that we're starting from scratch, off you go. And it was a very good film. With Star Trek being a sci-fi film, they can actually use a device to make the reboot make sense. Mm. So you can still tie it all together, but still restart.
Yeah, I've heard there's a bit of a sort of timeline thing going on.
I mean, it's not giving anything away, because it pretty much starts off this way, that someone from the Star Trek universe, dating from, I think it's meant to be about 10 years or so after the end of Star Trek Nemesis, which is the last Star Trek film.
Okay.
Someone from that universe comes back in time through a wormhole, black hole thing. That comes about.
Is it a true story?
It is.
It is, okay, yeah.
How that comes about, you'll discover in the film. But someone comes back in time to the day of Kirk's birth. I think by accident, really, but that happens to be when it takes place. And events transpire which change things pre-Star Trek. And as a result, everything that comes after that is different.
Right.
And it's a bit of a leap, because certain stuff still happens the way it always did, and certain stuff doesn't. So the same Star Trek crew still meet up, albeit through different ways.
Right.
And they never really address that. They never really say, what a coincidence that we've still met,
that. Yeah.
And except, of course, they don't know that they would have still met, but they find out later on how it all ties together. So, yeah, I mean, you can pick holes in it, but as a device to throw it out there and kind of tie it together, it makes sense. Hopefully, keeping the main Trek fans happy-ish... although I know one who isn't really, largely because they've changed stuff, and why not just make a new film? But also, hopefully, bringing new people into the franchise, because it's a bit sort of, it's younger and it's faster paced and it's a bit more actiony, which obviously will annoy some people, but it also works and they do it well. So with that reboot set up, this covers the initial days of the Star Trek crew going to Starfleet Academy, how they meet, what goes on, dealing with this guy who's come back in time and what he's trying to do, and it makes for a fantastically entertaining film. It's a proper summer blockbuster, as opposed to Wolverine, which I really wanted to be and wasn't. It was just quite by the numbers and a bit flat.
Well, there's something oddly in common between the two, in that they're both the umpteenth version of a franchise. Star Trek more than Wolverine, of course. But also that they are starting again. They're doing the prequel thing.
Yes.
And they're going back in time and look at the origins of it all.
Yeah.
What it seems to... I mean, I haven't seen either film, but it does seem from the reviews that actually Wolverine doesn't get it right, because it's sort of... We don't care. It's like backstory for the sake of backstory.
I think that's the problem. It's a backstory, but ties in too closely to a story we already know.
Yeah.
And given we know the end of the story, as it were, we don't really care about the beginning, because we already know the end. With Star Trek, we're being told the beginning, but it's the beginning of a new story.
Yes.
So it's sort of a prequel, but also a new
story. It's sort of resetting slightly, isn't it, really, in a way? Yeah,
But it does hit the line nicely. Being a casual Star Trek fan, I mean, I know some of the films, but not all the films. I enjoy when the TV show's on, largely The Next Generation. If it's on, I'll watch it and think, yeah, it's entertaining. So I know a bit about it, but I'm not a particularly hardcore fan. There's enough to like as a fan of it, because they put in lots of little touches that you'll recognise. So I can't talk from the point of view of someone who doesn't know Star Trek at all, doesn't care about it at all, if you'll enjoy it. But I think you will, because everything's explained. There's nothing too deep and pointless and Star Trek fan universe based. There's just enough to like if you know it, and enough to start to like if you don't.
Yeah, my only worry about it is that if they're sort of resetting in a way and saying, okay, all of the stuff that you've seen before doesn't really happen as part of this universe, it's got to start again now from scratch. does that in a way sort of make a mockery of everything that's gone before, well, and say, well, actually, none of it happened. You know, it was all a dream sort of thing, in a way.
No, well, this is what some fans are objecting to. I would argue, because the way it's explained in the film, as a reference you'll get, it's kind of like Back to the Future, or Back to the Future 2, in that someone goes back in time, changes stuff, so then that, at that point of arrival, things split off into a new direction. But the old universe still exists.
Yeah.
So it's not like that completely is destroyed, but it's just this new one is now diverted down a different path. But the old one is still there.
And I suppose if it's a fun enough romp, you forgive the fact that actually they're...
I think that's the important thing. I think the hardened fans may be less forgiving. Yeah. I think casual fans or non-fans will be very forgiving and essentially won't care what's happened to the other universe. Because you think, hey, we're here now. And it's it gets, for me anyway, a perfect level of action and comedy and thrills. I mean, it could probably maybe do with a bit more characterisation in part, but everyone's good. I mean, but again, if you know, given the Star Trek characters are relatively iconic, even if you're not a fan, you know that Spock is emotionless and Kirk's a bit gung-ho, maybe the Doctor's a bit sort of, I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer, or similar. So you get the basic, and then you see these characters brought to life and do their own thing. And, yeah, and the direction as well.
J.J. Abrams, is that right?
Yes, it is. Yeah. And he really does know his stuff. It's right on the edge of being a bit too much at times, but it's the right side of it.
Right.
And there's quite a lot of camera shake and lens flare and weird angles, but it generally just adds to the dynamic feel of the scenes that are going on. And the action is well directed, because rather than a relatively sort of static camera on the bridge, everyone wobbling, then things moving through space.
Is there a bit of running from side to side?
Not really. It's largely just a big explosion and people getting thrown around a lot.
And so do they beam themselves down to a planet with Kirk and Spock and, like, one other?
Well, this is one Star Trek thing that does get a nod. Not really blatantly get a nod, as in someone getting called aboard and they go, oh dear, I'm going to die.
Yes.
But at one point, and I'm not really spoiling anything, they do just say, someone say, right, Kirk, Sulu, Engineer Olsen, you're coming with me. And as soon as they're there, I just burst out laughing.
And Engineer Olsen just goes, oh no.
Yeah. No, but he does it. Everything's fine on screen. But it's done so obviously that anyone watching
knows. It's a good reference.
And it's very obvious as well. I mean, you know he's not going to end up happy.
Yeah.
And the way he dies as well, you kind of see it coming quite a little bit.
Oh, you've ruined it now. As if we didn't see that coming. Well, he's a bonus man.
Exactly. When the two main people and one extra doesn't.
Yes.
But, yeah, so it's so there are nods like that, which you can appreciate if you know. But if you don't know the tradition that the extra in Star Trek always dies, it doesn't matter, because you'll just see this and this extra guy dies and you carry on. Yeah. So, yeah, and that whole sequence is good. There's one slightly bolted on action sequence which doesn't quite fit, which is when Kirk's on an island on a planet being chased by a monster, which just seems a little bit pointless, but it serves a purpose to drive him to the next thing, so it kind of makes sense. But yeah, I just came out of it with a big smile on my face, having thoroughly enjoyed it and laughed and got involved and enjoyed every second of it.
Is this setting up for another more franchises, then, more to follow? Is it going to be a sequel?
I'm fairly sure that is the plan. I mean, assuming it does well.
I think it seems to have done well.
And it's getting very, very positive reviews. Probably not from the hardcore fans. And I don't want to say ignore them because there aren't enough of them, because that's too harsh. But from a sort of business entertainment point of view, you can ignore them, which is harsh, but at the same time, I can see why they've gone that route.
And the hardcore Star Trek fans will watch it anyway if it's got Star Trek in front of it. So you sort of got to
they'll either watch it anyway or else ignore it completely and just be happy with the everything that exists already.
Yeah.
And they may be annoyed that it's changed. And fair enough, I can understand why they would be annoyed that it's changed. But financially and in audience numbers, it needed a shot in the arm. It needed to be mixed around. I really like Star Trek Nemesis, but it just didn't do that well, apparently.
How does this fit in with the odd number, even number Star Trek?
It's technically an odd numbered one.
Oh, that's not a good thing, is it?
It's not meant to be a good thing, but it does completely destroy that.
But then it's a reboot, isn't it? So it's a reboot.
Well,
of
yes, exactly. But then some people would say that Star Trek Nemesis, which was an even numbered one, wasn't any good. But I disagree. I really liked it anyway. That's reviewing another film.
Yes, indeed.
But essentially, if you have any knowledge of Star Trek, or I'd argue even if you don't, then seek it out and you'll enjoy it. It's a big, big, loud action blockbuster.
I think, because contrary to the image, which is that I'm slightly geeky and like a bit of sci-fi, I've only ever seen Star Trek First Contact
and
half of the one with the whales. That's which I think is number
Voyage
four.
Home. Voyage yes. Home,
that's right. Never seen an episode of it on the TV.
Yeah.
Only seen one and a half of the films. Enjoyed it when I've seen it, but
yeah.
I've deliberately not watched anything else of it because I thought if I start and I like this, you can kiss goodbye to your life, really, because
yes.
there's so much of it.
I think that's probably a problem as well, in that even aside from whether the studio wanted to ignore the hardcore fans and say, oh, we're doing our own thing, I think people were probably increasingly put off going to see a Star Trek film, knowing that, you know, it's the 10th film and it's following on from five series, maybe.
Yeah.
With all this backstory, you just think, well, I'm coming to it too late. I don't know the history. You're expected to know the history. So at least if you start from a blank slate, you can build it up again.
Yeah.
And yeah, obviously there are people who will be annoyed at that direction, and fair enough.
Yes.
But I think they will be in the minority, which doesn't make them wrong, but it just means that I think both points of view are valid. And I, anyway, enjoyed it on the level that this film is served up.
Yeah. Moving on then, Star Trek has been most useful for us at the movie timeline because it's given many, many of the dates for it, particularly in the stuff in the future, which is always handy.
True.
That leads us perfectly into This Week in Movie History.
Hey.
Is that what we call it?
Yes.
You're good. Okay, that's fine. This Week in Movie History. So if you haven't heard this bit before, this is when I dictate an event that happened this week in movie history in film world, and John will try and guess what film it is.
Yes.
They're quite easy this week.
Oh, really?
So just to give you a heads up. Okay. You can play along at home. Why don't you? Okay, in This Week in Movie History, May the 12th, 1984. The clue is there is the year 1984. Winston Smith writes in his diary, "Freedom is the freedom to say that 2 plus 2 equals 4. If that is granted, all else follows." What was the film?
I'd say that was 1984.
Correct. Well done. Well
Slightly
done.
Weird statement to make, though. Surely the freedom is the freedom to say 2 plus 2 equals 5. Because even though it's wrong, you're still free to do it.
Maybe I misspelt it. Oh, maybe my spell correct actually said, no, that's not it. 2 plus 2 equals 4.
Spell and maths correct.
Indeed, yeah. May 13th, the year 2000. A student has a premonition that his plane will crash upon takeoff. And it does.
Final Destination.
Correct. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Well done. Not a popular in-flight movie, that one. May the 14th, 1978. Capricorn 1 appears to land on Mars, but in fact, it's a studio in the desert.
Is that Capricorn 1?
It is, yes.
You could have changed that wording slightly to make it a bit more difficult.
Or to Capricorn 2.
No.
But then my spell check thing would interfere and say, actually, it's Capricorn 1.
Some sort of Mars landing is faked or something.
Well, possibly. Okay, I'll change it for the next one.
Okay,
make it easier. Here we go. May 15th, 1985. Lord Richard Croft, father of Lara, goes missing in the field.
It's going to be Tomb Raider.
Yeah, now I made it a bit more
Lara
difficult
Croft,
by
Tomb Raider.
Not saying Lara Croft as one word there.
That made it vastly more difficult.
It was making it tricky.
That was near impossible.
And the last one. Okay, May the 18th. In the year 1593,
ooh,
playwright Thomas Kidd accuses Christopher Marlowe, and therefore leading to his arrest.
I'm going to hazard a guess. It's Shakespeare in Love.
Correct. Well done. There you go. Full marks.
Hey.
Full house. Well done. Well done. So, good, that was on This Week in Movie History, or in this week, under this week.
Just This Week in Movie
This
History.
Week in Movie History, that was that.
Yes, it's been a long time.
It has been a long time, it's been a while. So, let's talk about Coraline.
Coraline, that works.
Coraline, yes. This is a new film from...
Henry Selick,
good.
See, this
it's almost annoying.
This is,
I knew you knew.
This is a name which I deliberately learned, because I'm a big fan of The Nightmare Before Christmas, which he directed. And for a long time, I thought, right, I'm going to know the director of this.
Yes.
Because for like a pub quiz or something, it's going to come up and someone's going to go, oh, Tim Burton directed that. Yeah. No, it didn't. It was Henry Selick.
Exactly.
Henry Selick
with his moustache from Three Men and a Baby. And that's
Yes. But I think the way it worked with Night Before Christmas is that Tim Burton came up with the idea and produced it, but apparently wasn't really involved in the making of it much. It was more, I mean, it was his idea and his name. But in terms of the actual making of it, I don't think he had that much to do with it.
Mm.
But Henry Selick, who was an experienced stop-motion director, I think, he was far more involved. So he directed the whole thing. And now this is his own new film, which, he's done a couple since, but this is his...
It's not his idea, though, is it? It's based on Neil Gaiman's book,
I haven't read, but it's apparently extremely good.
I thought it was pretty good, actually. I thoroughly enjoyed. I thought it was nicely dark. It was sort of almost felt like the Roald Dahl books in terms of the twists and turns and the elements, the non-Disney version of children's films, which can be quite appealing and nice. It's quite twisted at times, isn't it? But in a nice way. It's the sort of film that you almost hope that a lot of the 8-year-olds going to see it will have nightmares about.
Well,
because it's part of shaping you as a child, is to have nightmares about these sort of
films. Well, so, I mean, some reviewers made the point saying that all parents come out and say, oh, that's very frightening. But saying that classic children's films often are frightening, like The Wizard of Oz with the monkeys.
Exactly.
And with the flying monkeys, not the band, the monkeys. That's slightly weird.
Yeah.
And so children's films have scary moments in them. But they get through it, and they're fine, and then it makes for a better film. It seems to be the parents say, oh, no, they mustn't get scared. But no, being scared doesn't cause you harm. It sort of adds to the experience.
I wouldn't protect a child from this film particularly. I'd encourage them to see it.
No, not at all. I mean, it's rated PG in Britain.
Yeah, I'd encourage them to see it with parents, I think. And probably not, you know, exceedingly young children.
Oh, no.
I think my only reservation about the film would be, I was hoping it would be a little bit funnier. Throughout.
Yes.
And I think this is a problem you often get with animations or stop motion, or any film really, that takes a long time in the pre-production planning sort of process. And this is, it's been years in the planning. I think it's the longest stop motion animation film to date as
Really?
It's also the first stop motion animation film to be made in 3D. So you can tell they've had to do a lot of planning. Every little detail has to be in place before they do it all. And as a result, you can sort of see where the script can get lost in the process, I think. Mm. When, you know, you're so busy shaping, you know, I think Coraline, they said that the Coraline puppet has several hundred different emotions she can convey in her face and all that. And if you spent so long doing that, putting all your efforts into that, it's not a film where the script comes first.
No.
And there are certain bits where, I think there's one scene where there's the two eccentric actresses played by French and Saunders, who say something like, oh yes, there's this special thing which can tell you if something is lost or it's bad, or it's lost or bad, lost, bad, and they go back and forth saying lost and bad for a while, and you can tell it's meant to be slightly wacky and eccentric and funny, but just not funny really. That's the only problem. I thought it's things like that,
it
just need a little bit of a tweak,
but not
exactly
humor,
exactly. That's exactly it. So it's light. At the same time, it's very dark, but it's you know, it's sort of got a lightness to the script, but it didn't quite have the big laughs, I thought. But, you know, so be it.
It's worth covering the sort of premise, just because it's a bit... it's, Coraline is based on, it's based on a book by Neil Gaiman, and the idea is it's a parents and a daughter move into a new set of apartments. Well, not, you know, it's a very old building, but new home for them. And Coraline finds a hole or a door in the wall, goes through this door, and finds another world on the other side of this door, which closely mirrors the real world, her real world, but with several differences. Essentially, it's kind of a better version of the world and her life. With the eccentric neighbours are there, and her parents are there, and they're friendlier, they're not working as hard. Mm. But everyone's eyes are replaced by black buttons.
Yeah, that's weird.
It is weird, and it's quite creepy. And then, so it starts off as quite colourful. It's an alternate world that she goes to, and then she comes back from, goes to again, and they want her to stay. And they, but if she wants to stay, they have to replace her eyes with buttons, and then, and that's sort of a little bit dark. Mm. And then, but she says no, and that's almost all right with them.
It's a very nice slow descent, I found. It's not too rushed that they have this sort of this nice other world, and then it's suddenly nasty.
Yeah.
It's sort of a very slow descent into this is too perfect, isn't it?
Yeah.
And something's wrong here.
Because I was watching it thinking, essentially, because I'd heard it was quite frightening, and thinking no, but it's not that frightening. It's interesting, and it's a bit dark, and it's a bit weird, and then it does, as you say, descend perfectly, and it starts getting darker and darker and darker.
Mm.
Not terrifying for adults or children, but, or maybe, well, not terrifying for children, but it's certainly there are moments of intensity.
And
it's a very nicely paced slide into seeing what's gone wrong with this other world, what's wrong with it, the effect it has on people, and what she's going to do about it. Yeah, it just makes for a very interesting viewing experience.
Yeah. Did you see it in 3D? Did you get
I didn't. Partly, I think it just wasn't on at the right time. And also, I'm still not convinced by it.
Well, exactly, because I saw it in 3D, because it was the only option there was.
Yes.
But the weird thing is, I queued up and got my ticket and all that, went through, just in the nick of time, missed the first few minutes, sat down, and sort of didn't quite... And I had to put my contact lens in, because I was a bit blurry and all that, so I sat there and thought, I think I've got the wrong eyes or something. And I hadn't realised it's in 3D.
Yes.
Because they didn't give me any glasses.
Oh, right.
Yeah. They forgot to.
Ah.
And so I sat there, and I was watching a good couple of minutes going, oh, God, this is going to do my head in for next hour. And I looked around, and I was right at the front.
But
and
it should be... It shouldn't look...
Well, most of it wasn't. That's the thing. It wasn't like a 3D, the old-scale 3D, where everything's massively overdrawn each other. It's just, you know, you could detect moments where that thing has got a bit too much shading around it, or that makes it a bit blurred.
Yeah.
And I sort of looked around and suddenly saw everyone there wearing these dark glasses, which for a moment looked very frightening. I'm in the Matrix or something, suddenly. So I quickly sort of snuck out, had to queue up again to get my glasses. And so I actually missed quite a lot of it. I only came in as she was going through the door for the first time.
Okay. No,
I missed the first bit anyway, the prologue.
Just
really,
a bit of setup.
But the 3D thing, I'm very sceptical about 3D, really, to be honest. Particularly these things which are made for 3D and made in 3D, and it's a bit of a gimmick, it still seems. And you could tell there are shots, and some of it, bits did look very impressive and very good, but you end up thinking it's looking good, but it feels like I'm at Thorpe Park or Chessington or in these big theme parks where you go into the 3D cinema and things are going to fly out at you. And I'm thinking, this isn't, you're not focusing on the story, really, if you're doing, focusing on, you know, protruding things into my face.
Yeah, I mean, I think if people, if 3D was used to make essentially an entirely conventional film that then happened, that then had depth to it, and yeah, there's the regular experiences popped out at you or didn't, then that would probably be fine. It would sort of add an extra layer to it and it'd be quite enjoyable. But it's when most of the, well, actually, well, I've only seen Beowulf, I think, in 3D.
Oh, yes.
And again, it was fine, and the regular bits were quite interesting to see with a bit of perspective. But then you, every so often, you just had something lunging at the screen or coming out at the screen, and it's just a distraction. It's not necessary to the storytelling. Just look at 3D, and that's just not worth it.
No.
Especially since also it costs a lot more arguably often a less enjoyable experience.
Well, Hollywood reckon it's the new big thing, and it's a lot more.
Well, the trouble is financially, it makes sense for them because people are paying more to see stuff in 3D, so they earn a fortune from
it. You can't pirate it as well.
True.
So, you know, it's useful for them.
Well, except you can't pirate the 3D-ness of it, but you can still get the film.
But
again, people will only stop pirating stuff that's in 3D if the 3D is important to the storytelling rather than just a gimmick.
Yeah.
Because if it's just a gimmick, then you'll still watch a pirated DVD without the 3D and you won't care because you're not missing anything.
It's weird how it's generally kids films, or animated films really, particularly kids films, and 18 rated horror movies. It seems to be My Bloody Valentine and Bolt. It's the two extremes, really. You know, they've yet to do a rom-com in 3D.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for an 18 rated adult, you know, sexually explicit movie. You don't want that coming out the screen, do you? Do you? That's not nice.
Do you want to go and see them in the cinema or anything?
Well, no, not often. But, you know, next time I do, I'll take 3D glasses just in case.
You never know.
Never know your luck.
Anyway, sorry, we got slightly off Coraline. Coraline, it's very good. It's a visual treat, and it's scary to some people, to some extent, but in a good way, I think. It's not going to really jar you, but it's enough to make you occasionally grip your seat handle. Seat handle? Grip your seat arm.
Yes,
and it just ups the involvement factor. I think to a large degree.
I think it's Nightmare Before Christmas is better. I think
so as well. But I have a lot of fondness for Nightmare Before Christmas, which I haven't yet got for Coraline. Apparently Coraline was going to be a musical similar to Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh yes, yeah. They might be giants doing the songs. Yeah,
And then the tone changed, and so they scrapped all the songs bar one. But yeah, so I think Nightmare Before Christmas still has the edge, but this is still very good.
Still well worth a look.
Also, the very cynical thought did occur to me. Because the mother of Coraline is voiced by Terry Hatcher, and all the people who voice the characters in the real world also voice those characters in the alternative world. But Terry Hatcher, her playing the other mother, her appearance changes over the course of the film as the world gets darker. And the thought just did occur to me, to start off with, she looks like young hot Superman Terry Hatcher.
As time goes on,
she does end up looking a little bit like scrawny Desperate Housewives Terry Hatcher.
That's quite harsh.
Yeah, I know, but the thought occurred to me and I just couldn't shake it.
You're an evil man.
And the smile on your face means you can see my point.
You're an evil man, John Sands. You're an evil man.
Well, I try.
If I could see your point, that would be 3D 18-rated films. Moving on.
Yeah. to I Love You Man.
Indeed.
I'll cover this relatively quickly. It's a comedy with Paul Rudd and... I can't remember the other guy's name. I've forgotten. Yes, the guy from Forgetting Sarah Marshall and How I Met Your Mother.
Oh, him.
And yes, his name escapes me, which is terrible because I feel bad because he's the main star of this film.
When he's made better films, we'll remember who he is. And then he'll earn a mention on Movie Banter. He's sitting at home listening to this thinking, curses, I should have made better films.
No, but I feel bad for not knowing his name, but I don't. And we don't have time to look it up. It's a comedy where Paul Rudd, it starts off with him proposing to his girlfriend, and then over the course of discussions, he realises that he will need a best man, and also in planning the wedding, think about who he's going to invite, and he realises he doesn't actually have that many friends, because in the trailer it seems a bit like he doesn't have many male friends and that's it, but in the film you realise he just doesn't have that many friends generally. He puts a lot of effort into his relationship. His girlfriend's very, very happy. He gets on generally well with all her friends, but he just doesn't have that many friends of his own. But he needs a best man, so he realises, right, I need to get a life and get out there and do other stuff. So he tries to meet men he can be friends with, with unpredictably, I won't even say hilarious consequences, with sort of predictable responses ranging from accidentally being set up with a gay man to trying to chat to other people and realising they're their own group and he just doesn't get stuck in. But then eventually comes across a guy called Sydney. Paul Rudd plays a real estate agent, and this guy Sydney is at an open house that he's hosting, and they just strike up a conversation and get on quite well, and eventually he sort of asks him out in a way, and they just start sort of hanging out a bit and realise they get on quite well. And but then being more blokey with this guy starts affecting his relationship to a degree and takes its toll and changes him a bit and makes him realise other stuff. And it is good. I enjoyed it. I laughed. But it wasn't as funny as I wanted it to be.
I remember when the trailer came out ages ago, you were saying, oh, this looks like a really good film. I Love You Man. Looks like it's going to be...
Yeah, it does.
To that one.
The,
looks good.
Well, the 18-rated, R-rated trailer looked good. The watered-down one wasn't nearly as funny.
Right.
And, yeah, it felt a little bit like Knocked Up. It's a good film. I was entertained throughout it, but there aren't enough jokes in
it. Not as fun as it could be.
Yeah, and not the jokes fall flat. So there's not. It's not that they're really trying to make you laugh, and then you just fail. So you end up annoyed. But there just aren't quite as many really funny bits as I wish there had been. But I still enjoyed it. I mean, it was a good film, and it's worth a look. But probably a rental if you're of a mood for It's not even romantic. I mean, it's the term which you hate. And to be honest, I'm not that big a fan of a sort of bromance or a bromantic comedy. Yeah, I know. But that it describes the film. It's about this relationship between these two guys and his girlfriend as well. But it's entertaining viewing, but not necessarily worth rushing out to the cinema.
It seems like this. What's he called? This fellow who did Knocked Up. Who was the guy?
Judd Apatow. Yes.
Yeah, he's got a lot to answer for. I think in it, he's started this new, a slight offshoot, which is the.
I think in a good way though.
Well, in a good way, but
it's an interesting range of films.
But then sometimes you get films which are entertaining enough.
Then this has nothing to do with him.
Well, I know, but it's sort of seems to be that sort of tone.
Yes, yeah, that is true.
I mean, Paul Rudd's delighted, I'm sure. He's getting so much more work than he used to. But
that's it, and Paul Rudd is good, and he is a comic genius, and he is well used in this. But yeah, films along these lines do run the risk of being not one note, but just getting into a repetitive pattern. But you could argue romantic comedies do.
Well, true.
They all follow the same pattern, but it's how they go about it. So I think provided they can up the quality a bit and just keep the jokes coming and make the... I mean, as a scenario, it's quite an entertaining one, but there just aren't quite enough jokes in it. But I did enjoy it. I feel like I'm doing it down unfairly. But yeah, just they need to avoid getting into a rut.
Yes.
Although his
Into a rut.
Yeah, nice.
Thanks.
Although Judd Apatow's new film called Funny People is apparently looking extremely good.
Okay.
And it's more on the sort of the comedy drama edge, but not in the sort of dramedy Royal Tenenbaums, not funny at all sort of dramedy, but actually having proper jokes but with a serious story as well.
I hated the Royal Tenenbaums so much. Yeah, it's not even funny how much I hated that film. Oh.
Anyway, calm.
Anyway,
calm.
Good. Yes. Well, that's for another week. We should wrap up, really.
We should, really.
One thing to wrap up with is the much-missed Desert Island Flicks.
Very true.
You didn't even have it last week, did you?
No, I didn't. Well, because I always forget about it, because I'm rubbish like that. And Jenny didn't know we did it.
Last week's
she never listens.
It's the first week last week we haven't done it, since we started.
Really?
No, it's not. It is.
It's not.
It is.
I refuse to believe that.
It is the first week we haven't done it.
Really?
Yeah. But then it's kind of, maybe fitting that, I go and the show crumbles.
Well, yes, that is true.
So earlier we were talking about horror films, 3D or 2D, or even for some of them 1D, they're that bad. So we thought we haven't. It's very simple. We haven't done it yet. Desert Island Flicks, best horror film. So
This is a little bit of thought, but I'm not a massive horror fan.
No.
I'll enjoy some, but we'll tend not to rush out and see any horror film. I think they need something a bit more interesting to lure me in rather than just a stalk and slash. And I'm going to go with Evil Dead 2.
Nice,
because it's essentially a classic, and Evil Dead is more horror than comedy. Evil Dead 2 is equal amounts of horror but also comedy, and it's Bruce Campbell, who's a genius. Sam Raimi directed it well.
It's the better of the three, isn't it, really?
Because I'd say that Army of Darkness is a bit more thrillery, it's a bit less horror, slightly more thriller action comedy thing. I mean, it's still sort of a horror, but it's not quite the same. Evil Dead 2 is more the classic haunted house weird monsters but with laughs. I think that's definitely worth a look.
See, I think I prefer horror films to you, probably, but only in that I sort of, if there's one at the cinema, I often do go and see them and then end up often disappointed. I'm often drawn back in. I think the trailers often somehow work on me. But a lot of these horror films I enjoy to a point, and I often give them 6 out of 10. It's very rare I come away going, wow, that's a masterpiece, which is why it's very difficult for me to pick a best horror film. I was thinking maybe Saw, because when it first came out, that was a very good horror film, and very good twists and turns on it, and I did like the way they did it. I'm only tempted to not say that, because it seemed, if they'd left it at Saw, it probably would have been a bit of a masterpiece.
Yeah.
And now there's Saw 4 and Saw 5, and this year Saw 6. Now it feels a little bit like, saying you like Police Academy. It feels like it's tarnished with the rest of the sequels.
No, except that. I've seen Saw 1 to 4, and while I haven't seen Saw 5, actually. But while the sequels probably aren't as good as the first one. They still all take a new direction and all continue the story.
They do.
Rather than just being another... Whereas the Police Academy films, after one or two or three, really just plummeted into
the do something new with them each time, but generally the thing they do new with it is make it a bit more gruesome.
Well, that's
a bit more, you know, that sort of thing. But whereas the original Saw was, at times gruesome, but actually had some very, very good moments as well. I'm actually not going to go for that then. I'm going to go for something more classic horror. Ooh. And actually it's sort of horror comedy, really. It's back in the glory days of Vincent Price and so on.
Yes.
And I'm going to go with Theatre of Blood.
Ah, nice.
I mean, there's loads of Vincent Horror ones you could pick. There's the Dr. Fibes films or...
House of Wax.
House of Wax as well. But and I do have a genuine fondness for all of those. And actually, a lot of the horror compilations as well, the Amicus films and those ones, I really do like those. But I'm going with Theatre of Blood because it's the one I've probably seen the most. I've got it on a video recorded off the TV years ago. And I've probably seen it about four or five times. It's just Vincent Price as this really over-the-top actor in a part he was just born to play. And he's killing off his theatre critics in the style of Shakespearean death scenes. And it's just wonderfully done with one of the great 70s supporting cast of like Arthur Lowe from Dad's Army, you know, Captain Mannering, and Michael Horden as well, who used to voice Paddington Bear.
Oh, nice.
It's just, you know, these real sort of great eccentric British actors are all in there. And it is more comedy than horror. It's not, doesn't scare you at all in it, really. But in terms of it being a classic of sort of the British horror producing era from the sort of 60s and 70s, I'm going with Theatre of Blood. That's definitely one for me.
So clearly a strong horror comedy contingent, really.
Indeed, there is one.
But I think that's a fair way to go. I think that's a lot.
Lovely. Well, thank you for tuning in.
Thank you very much.
And email us at the new email address of...
podcast@moviebanter.co.uk.
Well done. I haven't learned it yet, you can tell.
And visit the website as well.
Do visit the website, and there may be blogs and things to come on there.
Yes, and also links there to our other websites, which we run and do, and the like.
Find out all your information there. And do tune in next time. And do send in your ideas as well for future episode titles.
Yes,
because we need your help.
Or anything else you want to mention or share with us or talk about.
If you would, that'd be marvellous. Till next time.
Farewell.
Farewell.